So thank you very much, Sophia Hackett, for talking to me today. First, just as some background for our listeners, would you mind introducing yourself and explaining how you met Mohammed Hackett?
Well, Mohammed is my husband. I met him, I've been married with him for 15 years this year, and we've been together for 17 years, and I've been fighting for my husband, who's been detained under a security certificate for 13 of those years, without charge, without access to the evidence.
So could you just briefly explain what a security certificate is and why you believe it violates the fundamental principles of justice?
A security certificate is under the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. It's a piece of legislation that basically allows the government to arrest non-Canadian citizens, either refugees, landed immigrant, or non-status, and basically call them threat to national security and detain them for indefinitely without charge and without access to the evidence. So basically, your public counsels are kept in the dark about the evidence, and you're given a summary of allegations. It's not based on actual proof. It says that we allege, we assume, we think that in the past, present, or future, this person may be involved in acts of terrorism, part of the network. The decision is based on reasonable grounds to believe that the person might be associated to terrorism. So it's the lowest standard of proof in Canadian courts.
And what allegations were made against your husband?
Well, there's several allegations, but then again, it's important to mention allegations. One of the main allegations is that my husband went to Afghanistan, and he denies being in Afghanistan. He's never been there, and that he ran a guest house in Pakistan for members of Al-Qaeda, which he's never done, and he doesn't know the people that are mentioned in the report as well.
And Mohammed has been in Canada since 1995, but in 2002 he was arrested and he was since released on bail. But what is reported to be the strictest conditions in Canadian history? So what kind of conditions were they and how did they affect your life together?
My husband has been in Canada 20 years this October, and when he was released on bail, that was after 3.5 years of detention without charge. And the day he was released on bail, I became a full-time prisoner in my home and a full-time jail guard. The conditions were that he had to wear a GPS around his ankle 24/7. He could never take it off. He wore that for 7.5 years. We had 2 surveillance cameras in the home. Our phone was intercepted. Our mail was open. He had to be watched 24/7 inside the residence as well. So that would, at the beginning, there would be just myself, my mother, and a member of our committee that was allowed to do that. My mother works 15 hours a day, so I would do about 95% of the supervision. So that meant that I could not go to work or leave him alone. We were allowed to go out 3 times a week for a maximum of 4 hours. Every outing had to be pre-approved in advance, at least 48 to 96 hours in advance. And every location and every person had to get screened first, so we had to get approval before entering any of the locations. Every person that Mo was in contact with had to get pre-approval from the Canadian Border Service Agency. That means they had to pass a criminal background check, had to give a photo and personal information. When we went out on those outings, we were followed by the Canadian Border Service Agency, sometimes 2, sometimes 4, sometimes 6 officers, depending on the outing, and some of those outings were denied. He was not allowed to leave the Ottawa area, and when we went to Hull or Gatineau side, we had to give even the streets that we were turning on to get to a specific destination. We have large amount of bonds that were put in place so that we could secure his release. He's not allowed near. He wasn't allowed near a bus station, a train station, an airport. He had curfew within the city, within the actual property as well. He had to be in by, I think at first was 8 o'clock. Then we managed to push it to 9 o'clock, so he couldn't be in the backyard by himself either. And the list goes on. It was a very severe conditions. No one had ever worn a GPS. I don't think. Before Adil Shaka was released in Montreal. So it was a very stressful, dehumanizing time for us. In 2009, the Canadian Intelligence Secret Services decided to drop the conditions, because that's the case against my husband, because they had assessed that he wasn't as big of a threat as they initially thought he was. So the majority of the conditions were lifted, except for the bracelet and several other conditions. For example, he's not allowed to be around technology like computers and cell phones. Just recently, he was allowed to have his own computer, but it's a monitored computer by the CBSA, and a cell phone as well. He doesn't have one at this present time, but he's allowed to have a specific model that would be monitored by the Canadian Border Service Agency as well. He's not allowed to use any technology outside the home, so no phones, no computers, so that makes it very difficult, even impossible for him to find employment. My computer was under lock and key. After his release, he was not allowed in the office where I was using my computer, and when I left the room, it had to be locked. And those are things that people might think might sound easy, but just for example, we live in a world of technology now, so finding employment is necessary for him to have access to a company's cell phone or any kind of technology inside a store, if you're working in a store. So it's been very difficult, but we're blessed by knowing that he's not in detention anymore and that he has so many supporters, and he's got a good legal team that are supporting him, helping him through this difficult time that he's been going through for the past 13 years.
Yeah, it sounds like there are huge limitations not only to his life, but also to your life, to his family and his friends. It seems to have affected a lot of other people as well as himself.
Yes, absolutely. When they say a security certificate targets, for example, Muslim men or people without status, that is untrue, because when you become a surety to your own husband, you become a full-time jail guard, you become a prisoner in your home. Every person in my family had to be screened for a security clearance. Every friend that we had, we always lived around most conditions, so we were always planning our Christmas and other special occasions around most conditions. Several times he offered to go back in jail, but that was out of the question. But we all suffered, and everybody that loved him and everybody that knew him had to pass clearance and live with the conditions while around Mo. So it was difficult on everyone.
And what are the risks Mohammed faces if he is deported back to Algeria?
The problem with the certificate is that you have allegations of terrorism on your back. So those are the worst kind of allegations that someone can have. So if he's returned to a country, he's from Algeria, he will be tortured or could even be killed if he's returned to a prison in Algeria. He might not get a trial. He might be in Indo prison. Amnesty International has written a report that proves that he would be in great danger if he returned to Algeria. So Canada signed obligations that we do not deport people to torture, so we hope that they respect that. It's also important to mention one aspect of the security certificate, is that in the security certificate case, the Conservative government gave CBSA and CSIS the green light to use evidence that comes from or derives from torture in those cases. Also, they destroyed every piece of original material. That was also challenged in front of the Supreme Court with Adil Shakawi. So basically, any intercepts, interviews, wiretaps, anything that existed that was original in the case no longer exists. If you were to take a criminal case and destroy one piece of evidence, the whole case would fall apart. They had also listened to solicitor-client calls, and that is one of the biggest privileges that someone has between a client and their counsel. They were basically just slapped on the hand, asked not to do it again, were found to do it again. They have also conducted several raids in our home and the other detainees that were illegal. And lastly, in our case, our informant failed the lie detector test. CSIS lied to it about, well, not lied, but they never informed the judge about the results of the lie detector test. So the majority of the allegations are from that main informant. And when the Supreme Court ruled the first time that security certificates were unconstitutional, the government had 1 year to redraft a new law. In that law, they put in place some special advocates, which are security-cleared lawyers, which have access to the secret evidence, but they cannot discuss the information with the detainee and the public counsel, so we are left basically in the same position. The special advocates have mentioned several times that their hands continue to be tied behind their back. The problem with the special advocates is that also they weren't given access to the informant. So the informant, the government wanted to protect him and obviously the other ones, in fear that it would link them to other things, other cases. But the purpose of a security-cleared lawyer is to be able to do that in secret proceedings where no one would know his name or see his face, and they were never given permission to cross-examine the informant. So his credibility was never tested. It would be my husband's word versus his, and it's based on secret evidence, which has not been clearly tested by the special advocates. They also did not have access to full evidence or to other kinds of human sources, so they weren't given access to everything. So again, there we see that the unconstitutional process continues. But in May of 2014, the Supreme Court ruled that, because we did end up in front of the Supreme Court twice, that the process was constitutional, although it was not perfect or ideal, and that the Supreme Court also admitted feeling uncomfortable themselves with holding a secret hearing the day following the public hearing. So there's all this that needs to be mentioned as well, because if you compare that to a criminal case, in a criminal case, which could not even stand in court, if you compare what's the difference between that and a security certificate.
So how have you been fighting these allegations made against your husband then, and what kind of response have you received?
We've been fighting it in court and in the public, and we've had tremendous support from people all over Canada and in other countries as well. There's been a lot of interest in this case in particular and the other five certificates because, I'm sorry, there were five in total at the beginning, because people mention that this is not the Canada that they know. We're in Canada supposed to be known for a fair, democratic country, and if you're not given the evidence against you, you can't defend yourself openly and fairly, and that's one of the things that the men have never been afraid of. They've constantly mentioned that they would like to have access to the evidence so that they can defend themselves properly. And we also said that we would like that information to be out in public so all Canadians know the case against these men. And that's the big problem with the certificate, is that your hands are tied, you're kept in the dark, and you don't have a fair and open trial. It's really important to mention that. That's all basically what we were asking for. We weren't asking them to be released, or we just wanted them to have fair trials. And the best way we've been fighting is through the court, challenging the law several times in front of the Supreme Court and exposing the injustice around this. And we've been extremely lucky, and we're very thankful that so many people have supported us. We wouldn't have been able to do this without them.
How are you feeling about the future, and has a change of government given you new hope?
It's important to mention that the Liberals are the one that signed the security certificate against all five men. They've also the one that drafted this legislation many years ago. However, I can understand after 9/11 there was this hysteria around 9/11, and they had to pass laws, and everybody was afraid and all that. But we have to strike a balance between human rights and security. And in the case of the certificate, the balance is all on one side. It's time to move on now. The best way for us was to keep faith in the justice system. It's let us down several times. And also through the times, we hope that the truth will come out and that we know that justice takes time. We need to be patient, and in the meantime, we just fight the best way that we can. We just want to expose the case to everyone, make sure that the truth comes out and that he gets his day in court. Now he's facing deportation, because the main goal of a certificate is to deport someone back to their country because they're a so-called threat to national security. At this point in time, we're fighting the deportation. We've fought as much as we could on the law itself, so the only thing we have left is fighting the deportation law.
So if people have heard this story and they want to do something to help or find out more, what resources are available and what is your call to action?
Well, we would like you to sign our petition at harkatstatement.com. Harkat is spelled H-A-R-K-A-T, statement.com. Go sign our petition. We also have a letter circulating asking people to take a stand against deportation to torture. We're putting pressure on Minister Goodale because he always has the discretion to drop the case if Mo faces danger and torture if returned to Algeria. And also you can make a donation. We don't have any more legal funding for this. So it comes out of our pocket, and this will be a long and painful and very costly battle. So if you're in a position to donate, you can just go on our website at Justice for Harkat, and whatever the size of donation, we appreciate it. And basically talk to other Canadians about this injustice. Spread the word. Talk to your local, your organization, other people that you are unfamiliar with this, and direct them to our website, invite us to speak about the case, or you can also screen the award-winning documentary, The Secret Trial 5, which talks about all five cases.
Thank you so much.